This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now, luckily, in this job, we get to interview some of the best characters in sport, right? And indeed, across the world, we had Pat Short on a couple of minutes ago, who was the gun-toting bloke with the I Love JR t-shirt from Father Ted. So it's a very diverse range of things. But every time we have somebody on who is on the upward trajectory, we say, and I say, listen, when you do X, Y, and Z, will you make sure to come back in here when you're done with that and we'll have another chat about it? 99.99999% of the people say, yes, we will do it. I'd say the return is probably about 6%, if even. So I have to hold my hand out and say thank you to Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts for coming back in to Radio City Talk. Because he said, when I'm fighting again, and when I put this man in his place, yeah, I'm going to come on, I'm going to tell you how he did it.
I said I'll be back tonight.
You would be back. And listen, I'm going to shake your hand.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man. Because, you know, you're so busy, and I'm sure you're training all the time. You didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
You didn't have to come back in, but you're here now. And the smile's even a little bit broader than it was the last time. Yeah. How are you feeling?
I like to tell the story and keep everyone kind of in the loop, obviously, with what I'm doing, the movements and things like that. Things have been fantastic. Obviously, since the last win, I've been concentrating on a few different little aspects of the game. Again, branding and stuff like that. And I'm due to go back out to the States and get ready, settle down again. Been training so far since the fight. Like I say, I'm healthy, I'm in good condition, no injuries. I'll be going back and getting ready for this fight in November, I'm looking.
So the last time we spoke, you had come off the back end of another fight. I'm really, really hesitant to call it a loss because both fighters ended up getting taken to hospital at the end of it. You were in awful shape. That's the scar above your eye, isn't it?
Yeah, it
yeah.
Is.
You can still. Just
oh no, no, no! That one was a previous war. Let's leave that one.
Another
out.
War. Anyway, listen, we could be here all day. Still handsome man. It's sickening how good looking he is. Anyway, but the Mike Perry loss. What did that teach you? Because you both went to the very end. It literally was the proper war of attrition, and you said you were going to bring them out. What happens out of that fight? You were going to learn things.
Yeah.
What did you learn?
Just a lot about myself and where I was at in my life and my personal life and where my mind was at. And the mind is a big, big part to kind of overcome any sort of physicality that we will have in a fight. And you don't realize that sometimes until you're in there, because that's when it truly gets tested. Like you're on your own, the cameras are on you, and you get a lot of pressure from all different areas. But you're obviously in there to do a job as well. But same time, you'll only ever get to feel them differences when you're actually in the middle of a fight.
Mm. And when you approached your next fight, the Bobby Nash fight, what changed?
Just a lot of things in my personal life was good, and I've been happy. I've been controlled and disciplined, and yeah, just the camp went perfect. I had the perfect team around me, so we were settled down in Florida. I had a couple of top coaches who were just obviously monitoring me every day and just being there to kind of see me through. And yeah, we kind of had a system that we then built on a structure that would work towards the fight. Then we just started game planning. As soon as the game plan came into play, we really started to piece pieces of the jigsaw together.
So do you have to change your striking, grappling, grounding, standing, depending on the fighter that you are fighting next, or do you always work to your positives?
Yeah, no, not necessarily. I say you always work to your positives, but as well as that, we're all unique fighters in our own way. So you need to be ready to be able to beat anyone on any given night. So again, it's decision making is one of the biggest keys to winning a fight. But other than that, your skill set, yeah, definitely. Your game plan, you look at a couple of weaknesses, a couple of strengths that you've got, and you just kind you play it out. You just kind of take it into your hands and you play it out. And you just know whatever comes, you just need to be ready.
You said to me, I'm going to take him out in two.
Mm-hmm.
You took him out in two.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so well played. That's worth a radio round of applause and a handshake. How did you do it? So this kid you were fighting, no slouch by any means.
Yeah.
Literally seen very like you, literally seen as the next big thing.
Yeah, I went into the fight and I'm known for starting my fights fast, going through very high in intensity and stuff like that. So I changed it a little bit, changed the game plan a little bit because we knew how this guy was going to kind of come out and exist within the cage. His wrestling background. National level, and it was something that we knew that obviously he was going to try and let that play into his hands. I've been working on my wrestling. I've been working with Greg Jones, three-time NCAA state champ over in the US, and he's had my game on par. So I'm there thinking to myself that we can have a wrestling match, and if we have the wrestling match, we're going to see who fares out best. But same time, I'm going to be ready. So when we do wrestle and exchange, I'm going to be one that's going to come out the fresh and fitter fighter. And as that kind of happened and the tale got told through the fight, I could see every time he was getting up, he started to breathe heavy. When he's breathing heavy, it started to let me know that now this was the time for me to start applying the good pressure, which again was part of the game plan, and start to slowly pick him apart.
How do you work? You did it in 3 minutes, 59 seconds. How do you do all of that? How do all of those thoughts have time to bed in your head? And yet you had him done and dusted in 3 minutes and 59 seconds.
It's where you say, all right, the puzzle's in your mind, but at the same time, it's also in front of you. You read signs from the opponent that you're fighting, how he's breathing, how he's doing, the way he's looking. And there's little telltale signs that we can see in fights that you'll never see from where you're sat. You'll never see on the TV, but only we will feel it with, you know, them senses. Because we're that close and you're that kind of connected, if you like to say. So you kind of just you read the signs, and when the time's right, you do see it. Whether they call it killer instinct you do feel that moment when to go and when's right.
You're listening to Radio City Talk. I'm Connor Phillips. We're going to take a very quick break now, but then if I take the break now, it means we have time just to sit and kind of properly wax lyrically about the professional, the UFC career. So I am joined in the studio by Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. I always do like to get the hot chocolate in there because I think it's one of the best nicknames in sport. A man with a 3-1 record in UFC, but getting out of UFC, it goes on and on and on. I've got your profile sheet in front of me here. Win, 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 loss. Win, 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 win. I could go on. I literally couldn't give you all the wins now because you've run out of time between now and 4 o'clock. A massively successful fighter in his own right, but I think he'd say himself, on the ascendancy on your way up?
Yeah, definitely. I feel that, like, this is the beginning of something special.
Right, let's see how that journey's going to go, and we will chat more with Danny Roberts on Radio City Talk after this.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
It's almost fight day here on Radio City Talk, pretty much. I'm Connor Phillips, you're listening to Full Time. Fight day for a few reasons. We're going to be talking about Hey Bellew 2, which is potentially on the cards. We're hearing it's going to be announced next week. I'm going to be joined by two-time Olympic medalist Paddy Barnes, and now a professional boxer after four. And in the studio with me, we've got a bit of time now to sort of kick back and relax and talk about Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts too. Well, Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. It'd be weird to be talking about anyone else about you, wouldn't it? So this is a career that started off as kind of you having a bit of a go at this. Mm-hmm. Let me see what it's like. And everyone going, oh, you're not bad at that. You're okay at that. I think and Liverpool being your adopted home as well, mm-hmm. it was kind of the automatic way for you to go. For those who weren't listening the last time you were on, tell me how you got here.
It's been a process over the course of 15 years boxing to MMA. And life's just been a bit of a struggle, but through it and sort of coming on top, I've realised that I've been possessed with a gift, and that this gift that I've got is going to be something that's going to be able to prevail, and, you know, be able to turn my life around and be able to do everything that I want to do as far as being an influence and having an impact on, you know, the younger generation and things like that.
It's strange how important that is to so many fighters. We have this preconceived idea in our head that it's these boys with tattoos and a really bad attitude who swear in press conferences, going to get into a ring, beat the living lump out of each other for 5 rounds and then get out. Every single, and I mean every single fighter, MMA fighter we've had in this show, every single one of them is involved with coaching and positive mental attitude and trying to create something really, really upbeat.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like it's kind of the thing that's embedded with the sport, as well as discipline, different aspects of it. I definitely feel that a lot of people get something back from it, where they kind of, a lot of fighters have come from disprivileged backgrounds and things like that, so straight away they've got something they can relate to, something that's from the core that, you know, it's meaningful to them. So it gives them something good to reflect on and something good to drive away from and something good to become.
What advice would you give to somebody who's potentially thinking of going to be a fighter? Just thinking in any discipline, you've been a boxer yourself, yeah. Just going, oh, you know, I might give that a go.
There's no such thing as might. You're either doing it or you're not doing it. And you've only got yourself to kind of really give you that motivation and drive. Because it will be a long road and the journey will be hard and there will be ups and downs. And we're in a tough sport. But persistence, practice, and, you know, you can get there. It isn't impossible. A bit of hard work, you will do it.
I want to talk about two different periods in your life. first of all, when you get the call to go to Cage Warriors, right, and you went, actually, this could be a thing. And in a second, we'll talk about the call from the UFC, sort of the pinnacle. Tell me about the Cage Warriors call.
The Cage Warriors one was nice. I had a fight for Cage Warriors at the time against a London boy, David Howe. He was a very brash young man that was up and coming, and sent out a few videos and stuff like that on YouTube about how he had slayed many men in the cage. And, you know, so I had the first representation against him on Cage Warriors, beat him, stopped him in the second round.
But how did you know you were going to do that? What happened? You just grappling in your gym and someone says, this guy's good.
Yeah, it's weird. Like I said, a lot of people, a lot of athletes, I would say, we all have a vision, but the vision comes together with a plan as we start to kind of materialize along that journey. So it is a process. It's a collaboration of many things coming together at once. And then when that actually happens and it starts to materialize, then you start to realize your potential and the potential that you can get to. So at the time, like I say, I was just training, having fight by fight, winning. And it builds that newfound confidence within yourself that this is the right thing that you're doing, and you're on the right journey right now.
Right, and so Cage Warriors went well. Very similar to your record at the moment, only one defeat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. How many fights? Was it 12, 13 fights around Cage Warriors? If you split all the disciplines, it's about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you have Cage Warriors, and then you can go off to different
organizations, that local organizations and stuff
you
like
can
that.
Come back, so. Yeah. And one defeat in that entire time.
Yeah.
Do you look back at that defeat now, or does that stay in your head?
No, it kind of made me, because after that defeat, I went and I took on one of Cage Warriors' poster boys at the time, and then I fought a couple of international level fighters that were top notch coming. It just really got to test me before I then got into the UFC. So I needed that good pressure from these guys that could bring something to the table. So it only made me better, only made me stronger through everything that went on.
Did the phone go, does somebody ring you? Does Dana White pick up the phone and go, hey man, I want you to come to UFC? How does that happen? Because it's so weird, because I have always been like an outside fan, and I've always watched from the distance. I was always very hypocritical of people who put a sport down. Yeah. Like, I love sport, love all sports, right? And I always watch people going, oh, this is just a brash, this is barbaric.
Yeah.
But I loved watching this thing build and grow. And it went from being a nothing to then you see guys on the street wearing tap-out clothing going, oh, that's that thing, that's that UFC thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you keep an eye on it. And I was doing some sports broadcasting at the time, and I knew some people who were working on it. They were saying, look, I'm telling you, this thing's going to be huge. And it's only in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So this starts to develop, and I loved watching that. So obviously you would have been the same.
Yeah.
How does the offer from the UFC come? Email, text, phone call?
It depends. Obviously, like you represent yourself, or you have someone that represents you. And you get to a stage where, you know, if your representation of yourself, which comes through the way that you project yourself through whichever avenue it should be, which is multiple ones, social media, your fight game, the way you fight, the way you hold yourself, there has to be an appeal. And the UFC look for certain appeals, and when they want that, or they get that, or they give you that offer. And like I say, they either reach out to you direct through someone, or
how did it happen?
I had the manager that I had in the States at the time that got me over there, started training for a gym, was part of the Black Zillions, and then I had a phone call from a manager, let me know, Dana White, UFC, they're interested in you. They want you to have a fight. So I'm like, okay. Four fight contract deal put on the table, then you play it from there. Every contract you move on, you win. You don't want to be losing. Losing is not a good thing, but you can always, for me, your performance is what matters most.
Yeah.
And that's something that I like to do, perform.
And I'm not going to be disrespectful to your fighting abilities, because you're sitting probably 2 foot away from me and you would kill me with one hand, right?
Oh, I can reach you.
Good, I'm sure you could. How much of your success, and again, using your words, you think you're only on the way up, you haven't made it, according to you. How much of your success is down to your off-the-mat swagger? How much? Because you do that bit very well. You do social media well. You do interviews. This is a dream for me as an interviewer. I can just sit and we can have the crack. And you give me the answers that not only I want, but ones I don't expect as well, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
How much of your success so far do you think is down to that off the canvas stuff?
As much as it comes down to the fighting, I think the best thing to do is just stay true to yourself. If I was a different kind of character, if I was one of these bold, brash guys that, you know, was screaming from the rooftops, like, I'm the best in the world, I want to fight this person, I want to fight that person, then so be it. That's me. But I'm not that kind of person. The person I like to be is, you know, is the happy-go-lucky person, informative, and to be able to let the world know exactly what we're doing, what I'm doing, and why I'm doing it. Mm. So there's no egotistical side to it. Again, it's just, it's me being me.
What's the best thing about being a UFC fighter?
The best thing about being a UFC fighter, I'd say just know the knowledge of knowing that you're on a stable platform where you're there with some of the best in the world, where you belong, especially when you spent so many years sort of sacrificing it to the cause.
Mm. And it goes right down to brass tacks. It means that you can be a professional fighter. You're not looking over your shoulder. You're not worrying about where the next few quid's coming in yet. Because believe me, I'm sure you know a lot of fighters who were UFC fighters and have dropped off the mat.
Yeah.
So to speak, literally and figuratively. What makes you look at the UFC and look at the fighters around you and go, ah, yeah, this is all right? Do you have those pinch me moments?
Yeah, I'd say I do. Yeah, and it's nice. It's I'd say the times that I get like that is after a fight, because you have that little moment of reflection where you sit back, you look at what you've achieved, you look at where you're at, and where you've come from. You know, all them kind of hurdles that you've managed to stumble over, and you still stood up, and you're coming back for more. And again, the losses.
Do you get the I told you so moments?
Yeah.
Yeah, they must be brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's like you have them self gambles with yourself. Before the fight, before you've even started that next leg of the journey or whatever you've embarked on, like I'm in the UK and I go over to the US to go and train. Again, I can have a little self gamble with myself or say, ah, this is gonna be this or this is gonna be that. But you know what? Like you prove yourself and you come against some doubts every time.
But what about the other people? Surely there's other people who've said to you, nah, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I say.
That's the bit I'd want.
Yeah.
I would want to go to the, what's the crack? How's things? Haven't seen you. What are you doing? I'm flying to Florida tomorrow. I've got my fourth UFC fight coming up as well. And probably some sort of modeling contract is up yourself. Oh, you're doing what? Oh, good. Take care.
Yeah, no, again, like I say, it comes down to the individual. And there was plenty of times where I've had people out there that have told me or just thought that, you know, it probably wasn't going to work out. But there was a hell of a lot of people that were on the other side. Again, manifestation. So I feel like if you're surrounded by a good few set of people that believe and think the same thing as you, you honest to God, you got the power to make that come true. For me, there was enough people over the people that did diet and did say, I don't know if this is really going to work out for him, because there was a lot of risk. There was a lot of sacrifice. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Because this is what I want. This is something that's going to materialize for me and for benefit me and my family for the future. So all of a sudden, that kind of, you know, being unremorseful with it and just pushing forward and striving for more, it worked.
I use the term a lot in my life. I make no apologies for X, Y, and Z. It's exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Unremorseful. That's not being rude. It's being, if you have a point, you somewhere you want to go.
Yeah.
And you say that that's where you want to go. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You shouldn't apologize for it. I think we live in an industry, England and Ireland, where we start sentences with sorry, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's easily done. And as a human, me myself, I've made plenty of mistakes. Even along the journey that I'm embarking on right now, it could be a hell of a lot better than what it already is. But at the same time, it's whatever's good or whatever's bad. Like I say, negative to positive. You just turn it around. You just move on. Make the next step.
30.
30, yeah.
Yeah, you're only a pup. Listen, if you have just tuned in, this is the brilliant Danny Roberts. Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts, UFC fighter. You have something, fight coming up between now and the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's going to be hard work in your training camp, but it sickens me when people come in here. Yeah, I'm going to head off to Florida to do my training. Because I know Paddy Barnes is going to come in after four. He's an Olympic boxer. And I know he's just back from Marbella, where he was fighting. And he's now, like you, training in Liverpool. Right. Okay. So tell me what's next for you, and then we'll talk about why the fight world is so successful in Liverpool.
Hopefully, I'm looking again at the end of November towards early December. So that'd be my last fight towards the end of this year, close this year off. And again, yeah, just another high expectation with this exhilarating fight, and gonna entertain. That's my plans moving forward towards 2018 and start that off very powerful.
How who picks the opponent?
The UFC. The UFC pick it. They send me for an email that they get an opponent. I get a date, and it's more or less just that's one of the reasons why it makes it so exciting. They pick the fights. You've got no say. You know, we just kind of, we go out there and do what we need to do and be ready. So,
yeah. Are they fair?
Yeah, they are fair. I'd say they're fair, definitely. And there's it's very rare that they got good matchmakers.
They want a good fight, don't
they? Yeah, of course. It's for the industry, the organization, and for the viewers watching. So I think they're very good with the matches. Even I look at the matches that I've had so far. They've been perfect.
But surely you've seen one. You're going, I want him.
Yeah, and you either get to the stage where you work up to it, or there's no one that's that around my level that I want.
You can use the platform of a radio show to call that person out now. I'll send this to Dana White. Is there anyone you
anyone in the top 10? Let's go. No, but see, no, seriously, there's where I'm at right now in my career. There's plenty of people. I'd say I'm on the cusp of coming inside the top sort of tier, and I want to be able to make that statement to go up, be up there, and when I'm there, I can literally just. I'll be able to get the fights that I need to get.
Right.
As I say, it's down to the UFC to be able to give me what I want as well.
Oh, this is what I'm talking about. I love the positive mental attitude. Just very quickly, we finish with this. Why is Liverpool so amazing for fight sports, right? We have our very own Fight Disciples podcast, sports podcast of the year. They get so much work and so much stuff from Liverpool alone. As I said, we're going to be talking to Paddy Barnes in a bit. He's a double Olympic champion. He's a professional fighter. He's in Liverpool to train this week. You train in Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Anyone would have noticed you haven't got a Scouse accent, but this is your second home. They're your words. Why is this part of the world so brilliant for combat sports?
It's simple. Liverpool's the greatest fighting city in the UK. So for me, like, with the influx of talent and the gyms, the knowledge between all the coaches, people that have been there, people that have walked that path, we've got it. I'm happy to be a part of Liverpool. And to just, you know, move on and really make this career something, and proud to say that I'm from it, you know what I mean? So
good man. Good man. Away on Thursday?
Away on Thursday, yeah. Thursday morning fly.
And that's you for the year, is it?
Yeah, I'll be back after the fight, Christmas. You'll see me walking around with my Santa Claus hat on next.
That's right. So you're literally leaving us to Christmas. It sickens me, but it's brilliant, right? 2.5 months. Look, you know how much I enjoy both watching you on the canvas, watching you in the octagon, and being in front of you. It's just... Oh, there's a lot of you, it's the real positive attitude, and it is down to that thing that a lot of youngsters are getting involved with it, because it does really give you a really good grounding for life. Have you a message for the Danny Roberts fans before you go?
All the Danny Roberts fans, just keep up with my movements, Dan Hot Chocolate on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, there's gonna be fireworks coming up this year, so make sure you tune in. This is Radio City Talk, rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.